You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. T-shirts, get your t-shirts right here. About to be fresh off the press, your oneofus.net t-shirts, you can only get them right here. And please do, because for a limited time, oneofus.net, our new black and white t-shirts are on sale for really cheap if you pre-order them on the site. Please go ahead and pick yourself up a oneofus.net t-shirt. Help out the site, help out yourself, and look great doing it.
Somebody talk.
Yeah.
Hello? So, are you on here?
Yeah, I think we are.
It's oddly, so like a couple of weeks ago, it was here in Austin, it was like highs in the mid 80s. And now it's like cold and wet and the wind is blowing about, well, I don't know, it seems like 700 miles an hour, but it might be like 30.
We topped out at 60 degrees today.
Yeah.
You know what they say about the weather anywhere.
It'll change.
Just wait a minute. It'll change.
That is an expression that everybody from whatever geographical location thinks is unique to their
unless
they're from LA.
Or Honolulu.
Yeah.
Where you could be a weatherman with no prior experience.
Okay, so like, right. Yeah. If you live in a desert, then yeah, sure. Then you get a free pass on that. But anywhere else, you go, like, you know, like...
You know about the weather in Indiana,
just wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
Anyway, weather stuff is boring, except for the fact that we are in Mark's garage, and everybody is, like, all...
Bundled up.
Yeah, we're a little bundled.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, this first part of the show has become, it's alternately... where we talk about people that died or what the weather is like.
Our weather forecast.
I know, or it's a weather forecast.
Our weather forecast.
Like, if you go back and listen to old shows, this is just where we talk about old people dying or what the weather's like.
We need a famous old person to die because of the weather.
Sure.
And that'll be like...
I can see where your logic's taking you.
All
right. Well, that was fun. Let's play some theme music. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it. Anybody watch the Grammys?
Nope.
Oh, all of it. What I do is I watch the Grammys, and then I tape them so I can watch them again.
And you have a whole library on VHS tape. I do transcribed.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And then I reenact them through interpretive dance for my children.
Oh my God, that's amazing!
It's amazing. Yeah, we do puppet shows in my house, but very similar.
Well, we did those, and then I lit all the puppets on fire. Anyway, none of this is true. I caught like very, very little of the Grammys.
Ryan, you were gone last year when we had the Grammy discussion, weren't you? I don't remember you being here.
I think he was here to gripe about the Grammys last year.
Yeah, I think I was here.
Okay, well, maybe you were. Our takeaway was, I mean, all award shows are useless, but it's the most useless.
I don't know. The ESPYs are pretty useless.
I'm saying the ESPYs don't take themselves seriously.
As my wife said, don't the like winning at that sport isn't that like what you're isn't like that the award
the trophy?
Yeah. Do you need like a statue of LeBron? I don't know. Anyway,
of the four majors, the EGOT awards, as it were.
Yeah, your Emmys, your Grammys, your Oscars and Tonys.
It's the least useful.
The Grammys is easily, least respectful.
Which is weird because it ostensibly the music industry is geared. It's a more youth geared industry than, you know, the Tonys. I think.
Do you remember the year that Jethro Tull won Best Metal Band?
I do remember that because I was in high school and I was watching it with my buddies. It was the first year that metal was a category, and I won't say that we were all like on our knees in front of the TV, like holding hands, wishing for Metallica to win.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like, so it feels like that in my memory, something like that.
But it doesn't that kind of feel like on some level that you want like the establishment of the establishment to like to validate reality, like
And so that's an interesting. I mean, this year they were being really praised because they, in various categories, nominated some people that you would never see on Grammy lists, like, you know, Courtney Barnett, who we've talked about on the show before, we all love, was nominated in the Best New Artist category, along with some other not normal industry people that you would see. And the person that won was Meghan Trainor, who, if you guys don't remember, her big hit talks about how it's all about that bass. She's all about that bass.
Oh.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's certainly alternative. Was the category?
No, it's just best new artist.
Best new artist.
Oh. Yeah. So
innovative.
Yeah. Incredibly innovative, right. Yeah. And then you have other categories with great bands. Wolf Alice, I think, was alternative. And there, I mean, they were just, you know, there were Kendrick Lamar, like, was the big winner of the night, and I do like his stuff.
Who nominates?
Will Fallis?
Like it's somebody, like somebody's really, really literal porn name.
Well, no, that's the what are those? Like they do have the porn star awards too. Should we add that to our
the AVNs? It's the EGOT.
The AVNs. It's the EGOTA.
Yeah, the EGOTA. If you could get all five of those, I am really impressed.
That's amazing.
Who nominates the Grammys? Is it like an Academy type of?
Yeah, it's another kind of Academy thing. It's the Recording Academy.
Recording artists. So it's a bunch of people that know nothing about music, basically.
Well, yeah, and the people that vote for it.
RIAA, maybe?
Recording Industry Association of America.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is it's another, like, if you think about it, if you compare it, you know, to, say, the baseball All-Star Game, for example.
Sure.
This is, like, can you imagine what a different Grammys it would be if you gave all the votes to music journalists?
There?
No, yes, to baseball players for sure. No, I'm saying like in the baseball and All-Star game, the people that get votes are the majority of them are baseball writers.
Well, fans vote too, but
right, but, the majority,
it's weighted more towards
the baseball writers. Yeah. So if you gave all of the votes to music critics, can you imagine what a different
award show that would be?
Yes,
it would be. Yeah.
Be like Radiohead every year.
It would be I would think that it might be more of a meritocracy, but it would be a different, like, it'd just be different, the different wrong people.
Yeah.
Kind of.
The different wrong people, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we should get on to the matter at hand.
Correct.
Which we pivoted.
Yeah, so I wasn't here last week, and the album that was discussed, what would you say, The New Pornographers?
We'll punt that to next week.
Okay, good. So I picked Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones. A band.
Did you say Exile on Main Street?
Exile on Main Street. Apparently, no one can understand when I'm Will Fallis and Exhumation.
You're just speaking quickly. Anyway, but yeah, Exile on Main Street.
Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones. And yeah, I did a bunch of blow on the way over here. That's
okay.
But just to put myself in the mood of the Rolling Stones. Like,
sure. Just knock the edge off.
1970. Yeah.
Well, and I totally meant to start a heroin habit tonight, and I just flat forgot.
I did too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some of that too.
Get busy.
I've been passed out in my yard for a while. Anyway.
Let me tell you something about the Rolling Stones from my point of view. I'm not a Rolling Stones fan. Never have been. Everything that I listen to, I mean, there's
that seems consistent.
There's brilliant stuff by them. Give Me Shelter is a brilliant song.
Well, I think you're probably about like I am. I like the singles.
Yeah.
Like the classic singles.
Sure.
Yeah, I can get by on a copy of Hot Rocks for the rest of my life and probably never need to hear anything else.
Well, and yeah. So I'll get to that in just a second. So I have heard about this album, and it's supposed to be dangerous in some way, I guess it had filtered to me, and it's just like, it's like this.
It's like legendary.
It's legendary, and it's become their, like, greatest album somehow. And I listened to it, and the first song, Hot Rocks, right? That's the first song in?
No, Hot Rocks is the name of their greatest hit.
Oh, sorry.
It's also a name of a pretty nifty sushi dish if you ever go to one of those places. Yes.
Hot Rock.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is rocks like, Off is the
rocks
name.
Rocks Off. Sorry, I knew there was rocks in there somewhere. So I listened to this album. I should know all this stuff. I should have my notes. I left them at home. I listened to it, and that first song, I'm like, oh, okay, fuck yeah. I totally am going to get this record, and I'm going to get the Stones, which basically when I listen to them, it's kind of like drinking like – rock and roll flavored water to me. It all sounds the same and runs together, but that song, even there's saxophone in it, and it's great, and it turns a new page, and it sounds different from the stuff I'd heard before, and then it sounds like a bar band record.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds like
just like, you know, somewhat competent bluesy.
No, they're great musicians on this album. I mean, there's no song. It sounds like a bunch of dudes jamming in some bar in Chicago somewhere. It's like Chicago blues. It's not very good. There's no song. The only songs on it are the singles. Those are great. Mm-hmm. Like Happy, that song is fucking awesome, man. Tumbling Dice, that song is fucking great. I mean, there's great songs on it, but for the most part, it's like rock and roll flavored water. It just all blends together, and it sounds like the Stones.
Well, we should probably explore that to some extent, because I think there. My guess is, I mean, I could be projecting, but my guess is that a little bit of the reason that you feel that way is because when this record came out, you were very, very young, and like sort of the Rolling, that version of the Rolling Stones is like,
no,
yeah, but that version of the Rolling Stones is like always been, you know, dated to all of us.
Yeah, but anyway. You don't have to qualify the Beatles. I mean,
No. I think every one of us here tonight. Like, there's no question, Beatles versus Stones.
That's just a stupid argument.
Yeah. So one of the pieces that I pulled there were a lot of really interesting insights about this record that I kind of got a kick out of. But this is a little piece from an excerpt from the New York Times write up of the reissue of this album, and the author here says. Kind of encapsulates a little bit of what I'm kind of hearing from you, Shane. He says, I find most of Exile good but not great. I can see it as I can't see it as a masterpiece, not only because I distrust the idea of masterpieces, but because I especially don't want one from the Stones, who make songs and albums like Bird's Nest, collaborative tangles with delicate internal balance, and have a history of great triage work, assembling bits and pieces recorded over a long period. But Exile remains the preference of the most judicious Stones fans. Why? What is its essence? Like, a sense of, like, he's like, I don't totally get it.
Right, and I think there's a point to be made. I mean, he's got a couple of points in there, not the least of which is, if you listen to the song, if you listen to the album, if it's in the background, and, I mean, it sonically, it's very consistent. I could easily, like... You know, you could be having a party and have it on in the background and have it be great party music.
I could be having a party.
Could be what?
I could be having a party. Why couldn't I have a party?
You could. I didn't say you couldn't
have parties
a party.
Before.
He wasn't saying you couldn't.
Oh, okay. It was a hypothetical.
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you.
God damn it. This kind of felt like a party till you fucking started jumping on my shit.
I know.
That happened.
Party pooper.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, God. But... You know, I mean, I think the other, like, sort of elephant in the room that we really haven't talked about that gets discussed a lot with this record is the fact that, A, Mick Jagger doesn't really love it. Like, he's kind of been on record, like, vocally on record over the years about the fact that this is not his favorite.
I'm one of
theirs.
I didn't know that. I'll say one thing about this album. The story behind it is infinitely more interesting than the actual listening to it. Like, there are so many wormholes and rabbit holes to fall down when you're reading about how
it got
made.
I think this is the record where Rick Heath started heavily using heroin.
It was,
yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, is that, like, essentially, it sounds like the band, you know, this record was recorded over 3 years period, and it was essentially, like, kind of almost presented like these two different bands. One were all the drug guys, like, all the guys who were using, including the engineer. And then the other was, like... Where, like, it was like Bill Wyman and Mick Jagger and Charlie Watts.
I think they were all to some degree using, but some more than others.
At the very least, like, that's sort of the way that it's getting painted with a broad brush on the back end.
Some were more and more into it. Hey, listen, why don't we...
Rocks Off?
Let's listen to Rocks Off. This is the second album that I picked where the first song on it... is significantly better than the rest of the album. Rocks Off. Let's listen to that one.
Okay. Another little excerpt from this this New York Times piece that I think that that track kind of reminds me of. He's talking about the band that makes this record, and he says it's not always the band that you know and perhaps love. There are a number of exile tracks whose parts are not played by the usual suspects. He's like, there's Jimmy Miller, who's the producer, who plays drums on Happy, and there's Shine a Light, which is not done by Charlie Watts.
M. Night Shyamalan?
Yes, M. Night Shyamalan, not Shine a Light.
You're on fucking fire tonight, dude.
Yeah, I know. But the point is that there are a bunch of like kind of fill-ins, because this record was actually, you know, made around the same time that Let It Bleed and Sticky Fingers were put together. It's a 3-year project, and so those are two probably more cohesive works, and this one feels like it's kind of big and sprawling.
What were the other two that you said? Sticky Fingers and what else?
Let It Bleed.
Oh, yeah. So those are – yeah, I guess with this, those are like the three that you always hear about being
ones.
Like legendary.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think we should have picked one of the other ones. But
well, look, I've never heard any of this record before.
And I didn't know
that's
it either.
The thing. Yeah. I mean,
there's actually probably more of it that I like than you do, but it's not by much.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Well,
like
during its bluesier parts and bar bandier parts, I kept thinking, you know, if I want to hear the blues ripped off by a bunch of pasty British dudes, I'll just listen to Led Zeppelin because they do it better.
They do it better. That's true.
Well, they certainly do it differently.
It's just I don't understand. Like it gets to the point. Like I really don't understand. Like all the accolades that this album gets, because at the end of the day,
it's way too long.
It's way too long, and it's way too long with not a lot of good songs.
Yeah.
There's not that many songs on it, really. There's a lot of jamming on it and stuff. Like,
well, there was some stuff I liked, like, and surprise, surprise, this wasn't a big hit single, but Turd on the Run.
Yeah, see, I didn't like that. Yeah. I didn't like that one because it just sounds like a blues song.
It was a little bluesy, but it had a little bit more of a jammy thing that I liked or whatever. I just want to see his face.
Jammy turds.
Turds.
I definitely couldn't get past the title anyway, but.
Well, what I typically do when I'm listening to these things is I just have it in my car, and if something strikes me that I really like, I'll pick up my phone and look at it. So I don't actually – the name didn't mean anything to me until, you know, I already knew I liked the song.
It's nice to peer behind the curtain.
Let It Loose,
just say that.
All Down the Line, all that. You know, there are more than just the singles that I like on it.
There's
much more.
There's a couple that are fine. There's a couple that – I mean, look, there's nothing on this album that's egregiously bad. And maybe that's why so many people are like –
Well, you know what I also – thought of during some of the more like kind of countrified bluesy moments. It's like, this is not that far off from Grateful Dead.
Well, I thought the same thing too, and it's recorded kind of the same way. It sounds like it's got similar.
What, They're All High?
Sonic quality.
Well,
different,
yeah.
different kinds of high.
Different kinds of high, for sure.
Different kinds of drugs. Yeah. I'm sure that there's some weed floating around in there
so,
too.
So this is kind of interesting to me. Like one of the things that they did when they remastered this record in 2009 was that Mick brought in Don Was, the
legendary producer. Yeah. Also of Was Not Was.
I was going to say, was he a member of Was Not Was?
The
dinosaur
one
thing?
Hit. It was, something that dinosaur.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But anyway, so he brought Don Was in, and he asked him what he thought, and he said, this kind of struck me as really interesting because it was always something that I heard in this record, and I've heard in a lot of like sort of vintage tones, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. And he said, there's a sound that's identified with exile that's become part of the vocabulary for every rock and roll musician subsequently, and this is the ultimate track of that style that characterizes exile. It's not sloppiness, it's width. In terms of where everyone feels the beat, you've got five individuals feeling the beat in a different place. At some point, the centrifugal force of the rhythm no longer holds the band together. So in that sense, he's like, that's what sounds sloppy to me.
Yeah, a lot of it's kind of ramshackle.
Well,
yeah.
I know, but I don't. Like, that's the stuff that I like. I like the way it sounds.
Yeah,
you know,
you get used to that.
But that's a really interesting and way too erudite way to put what's going on, but but it makes complete sense.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, like after listening to this record for the first time, or maybe just half of it or something, I had to do like a palate cleanser, and at the risk of sounding pretentious and insufferable,
I dialed up
some Muddy Waters, Manish Boy, which is just all just like the giant beat.
Now when I was a young boy, at the age of 5, my mother's child gonna be the
greatest man alive. But now I'm a man, way past 21. I want you to believe me, baby. I have lots of fun. I'm a man.
And like just driven home and super simple and like
I love Muddy Waters.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I just you know I didn't want to be like oh you know fuck the Stones. I like real blues. Well, that's kind of true.
That's kind of like, what they were doing. Like, no, I mean, but it, you know, I've said this a while for a long time about Chicago. I cannot stand Chicago. I don't. I just I always say how boring the blues is. You know, like how
some of it's not.
No, but the Delta Blues
is good shit.
Really good. But then yeah. There's other stuff. Muddy Waters, Lightning Hopkins. Like you know, there's stuff after.
I think Lightning Hopkins was from Houston, actually.
Dallas,
is that right?
Well, I know that he was in Dallas when he was blowing up as much as he blew up.
Did he play with Blind Lemon?
I don't know.
You just love throwing in jokes about Blind Lemon. You know, melon pants or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, you can kind of make up the names for blues, like classic blues guys.
I'm sure there's a like meme generator somewhere that does that for you.
Probably. Anyway, yeah. So, I could see how like you go back to the Muddy Waters or even like to Robert Johnson or
I love those like, Robert Johnson songs, but they're really shittily recorded.
Yeah. They are. They're hard to listen to. I agree with it. But then if you go way too far on the other end, if you listen to a lot of that B.B. King stuff, it's all so bright and brittle and in your face, and it's just
pristine. It's too clean.
And it's not fun to listen to. There's no grit in there. Like it's just
boring.
No, I want
my blues a little dirty.
Yeah, you're right. The Robert Johnson it sounds a little shitty.
It does sound shitty.
It's hard to listen. Like the thing about Robert Johnson is
you can tell they're like, good songs in there.
Yeah, but you get
it's kind of like a Guided by Voices record.
You know, like, fair enough.
These would be good songs if they weren't recorded on somebody's like Sears jambox.
I was gonna say it's like one of those old like tape recorders where there's a black button with a little orange
pavement
in the middle of it when you push it down. Those Robert Johnson songs, after like two of them, you're like, this shit's good. That's all I can deal with. Like, I need to actually listen to something I can discern when I'm
listening
to.
What's going on.
Yeah. Hey, let's go ahead and listen to another one of these songs. We'll get to your one on. I think I want to do one more song that I actually like.
Did you want
Happy.
To do
it? Yeah,
well, let's no, do oh, yeah. let's do Happy.
That's a good song.
That's great, and there's a good story behind it.
Okay, well, you can tell us story when we come back. Okay. So we'll listen to Happy. Can you say that Charlie Watts doesn't play drums on that?
He doesn't play drums. He's not the drum leader.
Yeah, and you can tell I never noticed it before until I'd heard that. The dude that played drums on that kicks ass. He's got great fills, like really tight fills.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, once you know that, you're like, oh yeah, I never thought of it because it sounds like the fucking Rolling Stones. And
yeah, apparently the way that song came together was that, like, I guess Keith Richards had been high for much of that section, like you just like
much of the 70s.
But
they'd be spending like thousands of pounds on heroin a day.
Yeah, that was just like going through that place. And so anyway, yeah. But he actually turned up early for that session, and that like there were a few guys around, but not everybody. And so they were just like literally that was a jam, and they were just dicking around in the studio. And then they were like, "Oh, that's actually really good. We gotta make something out of it."
Yeah.
And so they did. But that's where you also get into the fact that like Keith Richards sings lead on that song and not Mick Jagger, and it's totally buried in there, and it sounds exactly appropriate. So anyway,
well, Jagger's in there though. I mean,
I think, but I think he came in later.
He's got to be because I had no idea. Like, I've heard Keith Richards sing, and it's not usually a very pretty thing.
Well, yeah, but you can always tell too with Keith Richards too that it's like it's a little nasally and high and thin and like
I record all the old SNL episodes that come up on cable on my TiVo and like he was the musical guest and I was like, oh, this should be interesting, and it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was mostly just bad.
Yeah,
And I think he's amazing. Like he's one of the great. You know, when this album has flashes of greatness, it's usually a lot to do with him.
My favorite.
He just has that like kind of mean sound, like when he nails it.
He's got a great tone to his. Yeah. Beast of Burden he wrote, and that's.
I hate that song.
I love that song.
The point has been made that really like you can kind of break this double album down into like two parts, and it's like the first two thirds of it is this like kind of debauchery. Like ramshackle thing, and then
a bunch of dudes getting drunk at a bar and having a jam session.
Yeah, kind
of.
And then the last
bar band.
The last third of it is like Mick Jagger and Billy Preston exploring the gospel thing.
Well, and there's so, that, like, and they get kind of experimental in the middle of it too, a little bit. There's like touches, just slight touches of like psychedelia and just screwing around.
Yeah, it definitely
in the
gets more interesting after the first. Like,
I mean, are you saying that this fits in with the bar band? Kind of aesthetic, or
I mean, sure,
it's interesting because it sounds.
I don't know. I mean, we discussed it briefly while we were listening, but I think the horn section in this really
this song?
Shines.
Yeah. Oh yeah, happy. Like I think it's elevated above the bar band. You know,
I mean it. Yeah,
ghetto
I mean,
that a lot of the records in.
Oh, pretty. I don't know.
There is some bar bandy stuff. Like, well, who was the guy? Like Billy and the Beaters, or whatever. Like in the early 80s. There's a bunch of like bar bands with horns in the 80s that kind of took.
But this is tight to me.
That's what we were saying. Are you?
It is.
Did you miss out on the whole first part
well,
of this
actually,
fucking show?
And actually, like you just reminded me of something that's one of my like favorite. Well, maybe the only George Thorogood quote I know. He was a guy with realistic expectations because he was like, well, we just thought we were going to be like a bar band and play on the weekends and stuff. And then we got like a record contract. We didn't expect any of this.
What is this? I have to sign
that
something?
Doesn't elevate
buy a house?
Nope. Okay.
Anyway, it just bar band. Like, and he was just like – I think that's very realistic of him. Like probably same deal with like Georgia Satellites. You know, they're like, oh, really? You want to pay us for this? Anyway,
yeah. I just figure that they'll end up in a Roadhouse sequel.
Could be,
yeah.
Although,
which they're making apparently,
really without Swayze.
No, he's coming back.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the reanimated corpse of Patrick Swayze is
shit. I'll see that.
I will definitely pay money to see.
I would absolutely see that.
Pain really don't
seen
hurt
the first
now.
One.
Would the acting be that much worse? I don't know.
I don't know.
Can we go into intermission now?
Welcome. Today, we're going to speak of a band that we've been actually talking about, of course, we've been talking about the Rolling Stones, which are a band that looms comparatively large to most other bands. And sometimes we may forget that the road is not always so kind to every band that that comes together. And so I have chosen
very few roads.
Blowing my mind here.
Yes,
we have. Not it's every like, band is as successful as the Rolling Stones.
I know. Yeah,
but yeah, well, I love the way you're talking right now. Like it's as though like it's Story Corner. Like
yeah,
I thought he was like a 1950s educational film
welcome.
Narrator.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I need to put a little effects on his voice.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Son.
Yes. Tommy likes to listen to the music. Anyway, So today, every now and again, I'll catch a track that I have not heard in a while, and it takes me back. I get that faraway gaze in my eyes that Ryan likes to talk about, and just faraway gazes in particular.
I'm kind of obsessed. Yes,
he is kind of obsessed. Anyway, I heard recently the Godfather's track "Birth, School, Work, Death."
I love that song,
which I have not heard in ages and ages and ages.
It sounds. Like it ought to be familiar to
it
me?
Will be. It
when
will
you
hear
be.
It,
yeah.
Yeah. You'll be like, oh, that's the one. Anyway.
It was a band that almost broke out in the 80s.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. But this was the title track off their record that came out in 1988. And let us let it play.
Mm-hmm. no pain, just by the flow of Michael Caine. I've been abused, I've been confused, and I've kissed my reflection's shoes. I've been high and I've been low, and I don't know where to go.
You know, not a lot of narrative going on in that video. If you watch the official
video. No, but lyrically, yeah. they cover all the bases.
That's part of the reason that I wanted to play this is because I thought lyrically it might make Shane completely insane.
Now I noticed that there was B roll for school,
sure,
and work,
right,
and even death. We had the bullets dropping down, but there was no B roll for birth.
Well, here's the thing, and let's all say a prayer of thanks for that. But the thing that I noticed from looking at their Wikipedia entry is like this band is still together. And so when I see that song, I was like, really, it's all work for you guys at this point. Like, it's been 25 years of playing that song.
They had one other song that I really liked called Unreal World.
Yeah.
I may have even bought the cassette back in the day, but I was like, oh, yeah, it's the one song.
Yeah. Was it a mini single?
I mean, it was a whole album. But
I really love the 80s video techniques in this. Like the whole like, so there's like one.
There's a lot of soft focus going on when you're on stage.
There's no drumming in the rain. I was disappointed by that.
What was that early, like, that early band that you picked for like our first mixtape show? It was like Gene Loves Jezebel. They were wearing like a Batman shirt.
Oh yeah,
it reminded me a little bit of that.
Yeah, I could say, well, it was of the same era.
I love how the drummer in this video, like, he's got a bleach blonde mullet, and he's wearing like a white shirt with a shiny red vest.
It's
cinched low on like around his belly button. It literally looked like, and he was wearing some weird, like Mark pointed out, like cravat/bow tie thing, and it looked like he literally was going to finish playing the video and then just like walk across the street to his hotel bartender job.
Yeah, except that he had that kind of weird Midwestern mom haircut.
Yeah, it was like Rod Stewart.
It was a little softer than Rod Stewart. It was a little softer. It was the same color as Rod Stewart, but it wasn't quite as spiky. Anyway, it looked more like cotton candy.
You took Rod Stewart and mixed it with like
cotton candy
with Florence Henderson, Brady Bunch era. Like, there you go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's an apt assessment.
Anyway.
I love that song.
I just have a soft spot for it. Like,
you just have a soft spot because it came out in a year. You're nostalgic because you were young.
Well, I'm sure that that's
there's,
not
there's
that doesn't
plenty
unaffect
of stuff that
the
came
album,
out around that time that I
that
don't
is
care
a,
for.
You hear what's – look, I remember at the time – I remember seeing it on 120 Minutes, and I distinctly – I don't remember the day that I saw it, but I distinctly remember like I hate that chorus. I mean, I guess on paper it sounds great. There is no real – and then it just goes on. Like, you know what the song is going to do within 45 seconds, and then there's, like, multiple guitar solos in it. I mean, somehow they stretch it out to 4 minutes, and you've got a minute and a half long song in the first place.
Don't get me wrong. Like, it's not like it's got that bass, but still.
Hey, I don't like that either.
So I put The Godfathers in sort of that same campus like Smithereens, who were probably a little bit better band.
But kind of
that power poppy,
yep,
a little bit left of center kind of deal. And like to me, that's a perfectly catchy song.
Limited
and
ceiling, but not the lowest of floors.
Exactly.
Like a mid-tier, perfectly serviceable.
Yeah,
Serviceable.
Yeah, a long single.
A different kind of bar band.
To use
a different kind of bar band.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're not the Rolling Stones, but I thought it might maybe a little palate cleanser before we dive back in.
I love when the guy's like in the office and he's doing the masturbatory, like literal masturbatory guitar solo.
Oh, the guitar solos.
They had that one scene where it's like a big board, like a leather boardroom chair.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But my favorite was not that part. It was the guitarist who is contorted in the same boardroom chair, but trying to look cool and do all the guitar solo shit, except that he just looked like he was like, I don't know, maybe having a seizure. Like,
I think that's the exact part I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, did you see that part?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
good.
I did.
Remember that?
Hey, remember that when that Remember that time?
That guy was, he had the guitar and he was playing it in that chair.
We're all Chris Farley on this podcast. All right, let's get back into it.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for that little bit of nostalgia. And it looks like we'll be getting back into a different type of nostalgia for a record I didn't really know.
Well, yeah. So I've been out in the alleyway doing some smack. And
oh, good.
You I've sound started, like it,
getting
the
into
way.
The getting into the spirit of it.
I am. Yeah, I got to tell you.
Look like you're nodding off.
I got to tell you, this heroin is just terrific.
Oh,
yeah. I'm starting to feel it.
I love how you had to. It wasn't like in my car. You just said you had to be in the. I was in the alleyway.
So there is there like a Yelp style review site for recreational drugs?
Yes. There is actually. Yes. It's called Arrowwood.
Yeah. Right.
Everything is like 5 stars and then subsequently 1 star.
Yeah.
updated my review. Yes.
I now feel like shit.
Yeah, so we're back on the stones.
Yeah, and I while I was out in consuming my cancer stick, I did manage to look at their old Wikipedia site a little bit, and apparently it wasn't as well reviewed upon initial release.
At the time, it wasn't.
Yeah,
but we see that a lot with a lot of the albums we talk
about.
You'll
be shocked to know that Pitchfork gave the reissue a 10 out of 10 score.
It was 10 out of 10?
It was 10 out of 10.
Yes, I'm shocked.
And I tried to read the review, but it was really hard to make out because there's just slobber all over it, and there's just like, it's all smudgy.
There's like, like semen on it. Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't going to go there, but still. Anyway, the point being is they really, really loved it. And although I will say,
it's a boring fucking blues bar.
Well, here,
band
but
record.
this is also kind of, and to your point that you made earlier before we got to the intermission, I do think the story about the making of this record is more interesting than the record, because there's no way that, even if the record were better, like in our eyes, like there's no way it could live up to the legend of like just this, all this disparate bullshit that was going on at the same time this band was in this really fertile
Rolling Stone
period.
Like, I, you know, I'm not going to quote it exactly because it's paraphrased, but it says, because of the uneven quality of the songs, and then this is the quote, the great Stones album of their mature period is yet to come. Well, yeah, Mick Jagger's like, I had to finish the whole record myself because otherwise there was just these drunks and junkies. Of course, I'm ultimately responsible for it, but it's really not good, and there's no concerted effort or intention.
Dude, read the quote. Like, he's got
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
He just sounds like such an asshole and everything. Listen to this shit. He's like, at the time of the release, he said, this is on the Wikipedia page, too. This new album is fucking mad. There's so many different tracks. It's very rock and roll, you know. I didn't want it to be like that. I'm the more experimental person in the group. You see, I like to experiment, not go over the same thing over and over. Fucking asshole. Well, no wonder nobody wants to be in a band with him. Well, I like to experiment, not go do the same thing.
I think this was around the time that he was also their manager. And so I heard some interview with Keith Richards a few years back about like when he finally kicked heroin and he realized like how little control he'd had over this major part of his life for like so long, just because like Mick had been making all the decisions in the band for years and years. But I'm sure
he woke up one day and realized he didn't have any control over his band, but the money just kept fucking piling up. So
well, that's also
got to
be one of those deals too, where it's like if you're in, you know, I can only imagine, like if you're in an act like this and you are again right in this sort of fertile creative period where it's like the things that you are doing keep getting talked about as like being the realization of something that is either historic in that it's reflective of what of like old rock and roll turned up to 11.
Everybody's heaping the praise on you, you know, and you're also making an ass ton of money.
Well, right, and you certainly can't separate the two.
How do you quantify an ass ton exactly?
Well, it's different from the metric ass ton.
Oh, right, that's right, because we're the European
ass ton. Yeah. Anyway.
It's just south of a nut ton.
But my point was, like, thanks, Mark, was that maybe it really comes down to, like, you know, it's not really necessarily a self-destructive thing. Maybe it was with Keith Richards. I don't know. But it's like,
bitch's still alive.
I know. Like, yeah.
He held it together somehow.
Yeah.
That has been, you realize, like, that shit, like, Keith Richards is still alive. Ha ha ha. You know, like, but that shit has been a joke my whole life.
Yeah.
My whole life.
Yeah. What was the old Bill Hicks bit about that? He's like,
Diet Coke.
He was like, after nuclear war, there'd be only, like, two things that survive, like, Keith Richards and bugs. I mean, like, I saw a bright light. I thought we were on. Anyway, but yeah, so I just wonder if it was like one of these deals where like they're just like, what do we have to do to fuck this up? Like at a certain point, it's like, you know, like,
well, I mean,
it's
he just kept showing up for shows and they kept recording albums. So,
well, and I'm talking about like if this like this record was such a pain in the ass, which it sounds like it kind of was, and yet there was this sort of sprawling massive material, like
they recorded it like four or five different locations, I guess.
It almost sounds like it was successful in spite of itself. So,
well, so they recorded this over a span of like 3 years or something. So I guess they just
69 to 72
took stuff that wasn't fitting on the other records they were doing and kind of hodgepodged it all together.
This is a B-side record?
I guess kind of. I mean, unreleased B-sides, stuff that, you know, they weren't putting on other shit, which maybe to these ears is why it sounds so uneven.
Well, the other thing we haven't really talked about is that uneven, this was a record that was put together. These guys were all evading their taxes. So that's like they couldn't record in London, where they're from. And so they were holed up in some place that Keith was – primarily in some place that Keith was renting in France. And so, apparently that Ventilator Blues song is about like – there's only like one air conditioning unit or ventilator, like air shaft or something in the room that they were recording in.
I just want to hear him go like, "Ue la Erwin."
Sure.
That's just what you want.
That's how you look for drugs
in the south of France.
Yeah.
Do you say it like that because you sound like a member of Spinal Tap speaking French for a second?
Le cocaine est sur la table.
I'll have a shoe with cheese on it. Besides your grandmother.
Why don't we listen to another Rolling Stones song?
We can do Turn on the Run,
which I'm pretty sure was where the South Park guys got the inspiration for Mr. Hankey.
So what I want to know about Turn on the Run is which, number one, it's an amazing song title, which we all know, but I want to know if that was the impetus for the eventual Paul McCartney and Wings hit Band on
sure.
the Run.
Yeah, I'm sure it was totally a...
Because initially I thought that it was
It's like a call and response kind of thing between acts.
Right. Uh-huh. Like, because this song sounds... Why don't we listen to a little bit of this and we'll hear how much...
basically the same song.
Pretty much the same song. Let's listen to some Turn on the Run, Mark.
Turn on the run.
You basically are the Donnie and Marie Osmond of right now.
We get that a lot.
Yeah.
Do you?
I'm really more a little bit rock and roll, though.
Ryan, I'm a little bit more country.
Yeah. You're a little bit more like 80s goth.
Yeah.
From the
I am a little bit more 80s
Sunday
goth
night. I'm a little bit 80s goth. I'm a little bit... Rock and roll.
Meanwhile, there are lots of people who don't
get one of those hats.
I want to hear the 80s goth version of Band on the Run or Turn on the Run, either way.
That's from fucking like early
2000s. Band on the Run.
Segway.
Band on the Run.
Band.
Party of Five. Segway. Party of Five.
Okay, yeah, that was a pretty good song. You know what?
It's upbeat and it's fun. It would probably be a lot of fun live. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, make it my new ringtone, but
wouldn't it be weird? Because it would never get
it's actually just for you.
That's like, basically just that's
Shane's
my...
calling.
That's time to put on some corn pone.
Well, and like halfway through the song, you're like when it started, I was like, oh yeah, this was pretty good. And then like a minute and a half in, I'm like, is this song over yet?
It's just the same riff.
This is just what the blues do. I mean, that's just what the blues are. Like, it's just the same shit over and over and over, in the same pattern.
Child.
And I will say, at the beginning, I didn't feel this way at the beginning, but like about two thirds into it, a little sad, like slightly sad.
Yeah. Because. Almost bluesy.
I was a little down. Like, that's what I'm saying.
You're feeling the blues.
Yeah, I was feeling,
is that what you're saying?
I was feeling some of it. Like, mildly, like a lighter blue, but still blue.
A certain shade of blue?
Yes, like a
powder
like a,
blue?
Yes, a cerulean, if you will.
Would you say you had running turds?
Yes.
I knew.
I don't know.
It was coming out at some point.
We digress. Anyway, thanks for, good God. So thanks for sharing that, Shane.
Turd on the Run? Or
Turd on the Run.
Well, Ryan's the one that brought it up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ryan.
Well, Ryan's laughing so hard he's crying.
That was
right
a collaborative
now.
Effort, like, bringing you Turd on the Run.
Yeah, no, it's great. It was great.
Myself.
Overall takeaways?
On the record?
Yeah.
I think I've espoused them.
Yeah, I mean, I say that it's just a boring blues record and... But
most of it is. There are a couple of tracks that they diverge a little bit.
There's real.
Those are the ones where Mick is getting experimental.
There's good stuff on there. You're right. We didn't even get into the last part of it.
The LA gospel Billy
stuff.
Preston,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff.
And we haven't talked. And I don't have a lot to cover here, but I do think it's kind of interesting that like. Billy Preston was a dude that was playing with both the Beatles and the Stones, like right around.
How much ass did that guy get?
Like, clearly a lot, you would think, right? Yeah. Like, if that's what he wanted, I would think that it would be there for the taking, because it'd be like just having the ultimate mic drop. I would, if I were Billy Preston, I would carry a wireless mic around with me and then just say things into it and then just drop it and walk out of the room and then just see how many women
really
followed
know
you.
That happened a lot in the late 60s.
Early 70s, yeah. Not a lot of cordless mic drops.
Well, it's really more
from celebrated.
By the way, and I like how he presents this as though like you have a backpack full of cordless mics. And you
not a backpack, it's just one.
Drop them. It's sort of like a Hansel and Gretel.
Drop the mic, walk off.
Well,
and then do it again. Well, you can just keep doing it.
Here's the other thing you could just carry one mic and then keep the cord in
your
pocket.
But you'd have to go back and pick it up, which kind of negates the mic drop. It's like, pardon me, I left this here.
He's outside.
Right. And you have like
he's outside the door pulling the mic.
He's got a whole team hired that they wheel the PA alongside of him.
I hope so.
I mean, we were talking about it like 1971, so.
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah. So, hey, listen, I think that this album would be great at a party in the background. And that's my, Kevin is crying too. Ryan and Kevin.
It's genetic. Yeah.
Are both crying.
Well, I'm just really sad.
I think that.
Next
that is
week,
not
Billy
true.
Preston. We'll just do an hour of Billy Preston bits.
Dude, if you've got an hour of Billy Preston material, I'm going to be really impressed.
Dude, I'll let you do a fucking hour of Billy
Preston
material.
That's the one-man show I would go see.
No, dude, he's got fucking...
Kevin Newsom talks Billy Preston
for
an hour.
He's got diaries. He's got spirals in his closet. He's been writing it down since junior high.
Yeah.
Been waiting for this moment to finally bring it out.
Who would be the audience for that? Like the guys?
You, obviously.
Clearly, right? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, this was a hoot. This was a lot of fun. I got to say, you know, those Rolling Stones will probably sell some records.
I think you're probably right about that. You know, it's fun to bring up, you talked about Songs in the Key of Life. It's fun to bring up, like, the big albums that somehow we missed. Every so often,
well,
whether we like it or not.
Sort of the central crux of the show. We sometimes diverge a little bit, and they're not the giant.
But I do find myself thinking about, like, I think about this, and I think about, like, when we the Husker Du record and some of the others that were, like, these big sprawling things that I just didn't know. And it is, like, it's interesting to roll around in them a little bit.
Like my dog does that dead skunk?
Yes, exactly. hopefully, if that dead skunk had, possum, some, had some melody.
It was a possum. Oh, I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Melodious skunk.
God damn it. That was grudgingly good, Mark.
Punerific.
All right. Current affair?
Yep.
Ryan, you got it? Let's do a current affair. What you do? Go.
We'll be back after this.
Consternation in the garage because I failed to introduce the song, which is in fact Tame Impala's "The Less I Know, the Better," and we have just watched the video and listened to the song, which I got to say, pretty like kind of like direct narrative from song to video and you know, three arc story structure.
Yeah, I mean that video is probably. You know exactly what's going on based on the song.
Exactly, and vice versa.
Yeah. Up to and including the fact when the gorilla gets a basketball thrown through him at the end.
And it turns into like 20 multicolored basketballs.
Basketballs and float off. This is the second Tame Impala song that you have picked for a few minutes with, Ryan.
Is that right?
It is. Yeah, you picked I'm a Man a few months ago, right before the album came out.
Well, I have to say... I have the first Tame Impala record, and I didn't buy this one because I kind of what?
This is not the second one. But.
That's well, I have
the one that Elephants on. Like I love that song.
Yeah,
Elephant,
no, well, I'm trying to remember what the name of the whatever. Like I don't know their entire album structure. I know they're a band from Perth. I have the record that came out before this one. I liked it, and you're like the my point that I was trying to make was that. That essentially, this band got kind of shared, sort of the most common narrative was Beatlesque. Like if the Beatles had moved on into the '70s and gotten a little psychedelic, that was the low hanging fruit version of what this or the low bar version of what this band sounds like. And I have to say that I really was taken with the previous record. Quite a bit for a while, but I wore out on it. And so when this one came out, I was like, I don't know if I can do it. But that's the first I've heard of that song, and I really enjoyed it. So
I think they've moved away a little bit more from the psychedelic stuff that they had sort of started with, got it doubled down on, and now there's a lot more not synth pop. There's a very cohesive sound on this album. The songs are fucking stand out. There's a little melancholy. There's a little bit of synth bass. A lot of synth bass on it.
These guys are from Perth, which I've also heard apparently is the San Diego of Australia. So they got that going.
Well, isn't it on the other side of the continent?
It is. Yeah,
like perch.
Yeah,
that's a fish.
Yeah, that is.
I would
a fish.
Like to say that Canada did a really good job with this video.
Yes, Canada did fine work on this.
The entire country of Canada.
Well, dropped acid. And was still really proficient. A well-made video.
I like
but
the paint drip thing. That was
well. The guy like starts amazing. To barf, and it comes out, and it's just paint dripping onto a Xerox. Then it turns into a woman.
Yeah.
See, I feel like
that old trope.
Yeah,
yeah.
I feel like they took what?
Come on, Canada.
We had talked to
mate.
Go ahead, Shane.
Go ahead.
No, it's fine. You had just talked about the psychedelia, especially their first couple of albums, really delve into, and I feel like, you know, we watched the video for I'm a Man. You remember? I'm a man, wow, man.
Vaguely. I may have had a bit of a buzz on.
It sounds exactly like just the way like I that. Sing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a man, wow, man.
Now you just sound like Muddy Waters again.
It's kind of like if Muddy Waters' voice were
I'm a man.
Really high.
Yes. Yeah.
That's right. So I'm a man. But I think the psychedelia has been transferred to their videos now.
Yeah, maybe they took it out of the music and put it on the screen. Because, like, yeah, you know, I don't know, like, that joke definitely did not land earlier with the whole, like, narrative cohesion thing.
Yeah.
But
oh, I knew what you were
not,
saying.
Not a lot.
Yeah, no, there's, it is, it's
not
very,
a lot of narrative cohesion.
Yeah,
a lot of titillation.
Yeah, a lot of titillation, but
that is a truth statement.
Comparatively abstract otherwise. I would say it's visually interesting. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's not totally Dada.
Had I been, if this video had come out when I were 13 or, yeah, instead of, like, Tawny Kitaen, like, doing cartwheels across cars, this would have been the video I was.
You'd have been locking yourself in the bathroom.
I would have locked myself in the bathroom.
You'd have paused the VCR at certain points.
I would have been pausing the VCR to this one. Excepting the gorilla.
Well, I'm sure Tip Agora is pissed.
Trevor.
Trevor, yes.
Yeah, what up with Trevor? Like
he's taunting the other guy. I mean, it might be allegorical somewhere.
Allegorical, yeah. Trevor.
It was the, you know, well, the idea, like, of Trevor.
He's the gorilla in the room, yeah, with the fact they're not fucking, they're just doing mouth sex or something. I'm just
blowing my mind here.
I don't know.
Well, then, you know, preceding the actual music, there is mouth sex going on.
Well, yeah, but he's saying, don't make me wait too long. And then, you know, like, it just seems like that Trevor might be the gorilla in the room because they're just doing mouth sex and not, like, the real stuff. So maybe that's somewhere that's...
Yeah. No, I love it. You're breaking this down.
Like, I'm not. I'm just saying perhaps that might be in there. Fuck off.
Anyway, this was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is so what's next week? Who's got next one?
Actually, it's funny, since this was a nearly pornographic video.
Oh, yeah.
We have the New Pornographers.
New Pornographers.
And actually, like, I'm a fan of two of the members of that band's solo work.
Yeah.
But have never listened to a New Pornographers record.
You've heard them on the radio.
Maybe. Anyway, Mass Romantic from the New Pornographers.
Okay.
Look forward to it. Sounds good to me. Well, wait, which ones are you fans of? Nico Case
and AC Newman
and Dan Baer.
I don't know his stuff.
Yeah, you do. Destroyer. We've talked about it before.
I know we talked about it. I don't know if I know it.
You know.
Yeah, all right. I think so, man.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, all right, man. Yeah. I feel right. You do.
You guys get to talk about this all the way until next week.
Yeah.
We'll just keep it rolling.
Mark just said that with an angry scowl on his face. All right, let's go. Let's get out of here. Sorry for belaboring the point. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.